You're listening to episode 133 of the Mad Chatters Podcast, April 12th, 2017.
Most everyone's mad here.
Hey there, and welcome back to another episode of the Mad Chatters Podcast, your very important date with the happenings at Walt Disney World and around the Disney Universe. My name's Derek, and joining me on this episode, as always, are my fellow chatters, Matthew.
Hey there.
And Jeremy.
I switched to off-brand cigarettes.
On this week's show, we're going to be talking about some of our favorite ways in which the Disney films have been incorporated into Walt Disney World. And of course, we have a few other fun things planned as well. But to start with, I just kind of want to give a general update on what's going on at the parks right now. You know, for a while there, we had big news item after big news item, and we really haven't had one in a while. Last week, of course, we talked about the big security changes that came, which is a huge change for sure, but it's not necessarily something Disney is adding. So just briefly, I just want to give an update on what's happening at the parks right now, if nothing new is opening. So at Magic Kingdom, not a whole lot is going on. I noticed that a lot of the scrims that were there when I was there in February are slowly being taken down. So I think this is just like a transition period as they prepare for summer crowds. Over at Epcot, we have now reached the halfway point for the Flower and Garden Festival. So if you're going there sometime before May 31st, you can still catch the food booths and the topiaries and the beautiful landscapes and all sorts of things like that. Now at Animal Kingdom, they're gearing up for the big opening of Pandora, which is on May 27th. But one thing we haven't talked about on this show is they did email pass holders saying from May, like, I want to say 13th through the 22nd, they're offering previews to pass holders. And I think cast member previews are even before that. Like, they start the 1st or the 2nd, something like that. Did you sign up for those, Matt? Were you planning on attending?
By the time that I got on there to try to reserve, they were all gone.
Yeah. You reserve for, I guess, like a couple hours at a time, like from 6 to 8 p.m. or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't get the email. It's kind of a problem I've been having. I've never received an email.
You know, I didn't get an email either. I saw it on someone else's site and said, hey, I'm a pass holder. So I clicked on it and I tried to register and they were all gone.
Yeah. Well, I emailed someone because this is the second time I've emailed Disney saying, I don't get these pass holder emails and I feel like I should be getting them. And someone actually called me yesterday and said, we are so sorry. Let us. And she acted like she would go ahead and try to get me set up with a time, even though I didn't get an email. So I wonder, now that I say that, if you called, hint, hint, I wonder if they would say, because she admitted that they had had a problem where a lot of people didn't get that email.
Yeah.
Of course, I had to tell her I won't be there that week anyway, so it doesn't matter. But maybe for you, that would work.
Maybe I'll call.
Yeah. So anyway, that's opening very soon. Now, Hollywood Studios, of all parks, actually did get something new this week. Most of the park, you know, is in the transition period, but they did add a BB-8 meet and greet this week to Star Wars Launch Bay. So along with meeting Chewbacca and Kylo Ren, now you also can get your picture taken with a moving BB-8. Of course, he won't be moving in the picture.
It's just a blur that goes by.
Yeah.
He's like, he life-size? Like, he's like a minute, like a little thing?
He is, yeah. He's propped up on this little stand so that way he's kind of like where your torso is, you know?
Oh, so he's not really rolling around.
No. His head moves and, like, you know how it kind of, I don't even know how to describe it.
Yeah, it moves.
It moves, yeah. I don't even know how to describe it.
We understand movement.
Yeah, his head moves.
I think this is a good opportunity. You could do like a droid meetup. So you do like R2-D2, C-3PO, BB-8. And then what's the one droid in the beginning of A New Hope that breaks? Is it R5, D5?
I don't know.
I never really paid much attention to him either, but I was listening to The Nerdist. And Chris Hardwick was mentioning how like he feels like a special thing in his heart for that droid, because that's the droid that breaks down, and then Luke, of course, finds R2-D2 or whatever. And so he actually had that droid in his wedding as like the ring bearer,
funny,
which I thought was kind of cute.
That's good, yeah. I'm definitely going to meet him. See, now is my chance to finally buy the BB-8 ears and wear them in the picture.
You've been looking for an excuse to do that for a while, so.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. But the other thing that opened this week is at Disney Springs. It's constantly changing and adding more and more restaurants and shopping experiences. And this one is actually something I think I might enjoy or try the next time I'm down there. The Polite Pig is the newest quick service restaurant, and it's all things barbecue, which honestly Disney World in general doesn't have a whole lot of.
No.
So I think it should be a good addition.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that's what's happening in Walt Disney World. Here's what's happening in your neck of the woods. Just kidding.
Skies today will be overcast.
No, but one thing that is happening soon that we did want to mention, I'm going to be down in Walt Disney World in just a few weeks. Matt's going to join me. And we wanted to kind of offer the opportunity for any listeners who are in the Orlando area in a few weeks to come join us. We're going to be at the River Roost at Port Orleans Riverside checking out Yeehaw Bob Jackson. He's the entertainer we mentioned a few weeks ago when we talked about underrated experiences. And since we're going to be down there on Saturday, April 29th, we thought that would be a good chance for us to check him out and be entertained. And we just wanted to open that up. You know, we've been doing this for a couple years, and we've had the fortunate pleasure of meeting a lot of our listeners through email and Twitter. And all three of us have also had the chance to meet listeners face-to-face. And it's just been really cool getting to know other Disney fans in the community. So if any of you happen to be in Orlando Saturday, April 29th, come say hey, come hang out with us, and we'll hopefully take in a good show.
How will they recognize you?
Ooh.
What will you be wearing that evening to set you apart from the crowd?
I'll be wearing a Richard Nixon mask.
You might not be able to go into the lounge that way.
Did not see that coming. Also in your neck of the woods this week is death. And death has once again touched the Disney community, so we want to honor two people who have passed from this life into the next. Don Rickles, a legendary comedian and most known in the Disney community, of course, as the voice of Mr. Potato Head in the Toy Story franchise, of course, passed away at 90, lived a full life, and entertained millions for years. You know, it's kind of funny. Somebody posted on Twitter something about, for someone who spent his whole career and made a career insulting people for a living, he was certainly a beloved figure in culture. And he's one of those guys, too, that you can watch some of those classic, like, Johnny Carson clips and those kind of things from back when he was on in the 70s and 80s. And they're really still as funny today as they were back then. And then another one who passed away, lesser known, but George McGinnis. And he was a Imagineer who had the honor of being the last Imagineer personally hired by Walt Disney himself. So every day we get a little further and further away from those who knew Walt personally. And that's a little bit jarring, especially to fans of Walt Disney and the company like we are, that for some people, Walt Disney is simply a brand, but he was a person. He really existed. And so those, they're leaving us, and they need to be preserved. So anyways, we wish him and his family well.
Host, Matt Chitter-Derek!
Thank you. Thank you, Steve. We've got another game. I know we just played a game a few weeks ago, but this is round two of the game Before and After.
Wait, you're hosting this game?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
What? You liked the last one?
Yeah.
Well,
continue.
If you like the last one, you're really going to like this one because it's the same thing.
Oh, boy.
So here's what happened. I was so excited about Before and After last time we played it, and you guys kind of killed it. Like, you were really good at it. And so I felt like it was too easy. So
you made it harder.
I did. I hope I made it harder. You're probably going to be like, this is just as easy. But I went back to the drawing board. I came up with some more answers. And to remind you of how it's played, in case you already forgot, it's going to be a mashup of two Disney things, movies, songs, attractions, shops, whatever. And the last word of the first answer will be the first word of the second answer. And I think in every case that's true. I tried to keep out like plurals and apostrophes and weird exceptions to the rule.
For example, Snow White Power.
That's a great example. Didn't make my list.
Ugh.
I know, believe it or not. But anyway, so I've got a new list, new answers, so we're going to challenge you once again with Disney Before and After. All right, Jeremy, pick a number between 1 and 10.
5.
And Matt?
6.
The number was 9. So Matt, would you like to go first or second?
I get the steal, right?
Yep, you can steal.
I'll go second.
All right. Jeremy, the first one comes to you, and they do start out easier, so don't be thrown off. A kind, magical being who can transform puppets into real boys and pumpkins into carriages.
Oh, okay. I was really thrown off there for a second because I was like, I don't know Geppetto's last name. Blue Fairy Godmother.
That is correct. Matthew, this hang gliding simulator attraction gives you an overhead view of Disney California Adventure's water show.
Soaring around the world of color.
That is correct. Jeremy, a Disney film in which Robin Hood's best friend keeps claiming the sky is falling.
What is Chicken Little John?
Very good. Matt, we're back to you. A variety show in which children celebrities like Justin Timberlake sample Coca-Cola varieties from around the world.
The Mickey Mouse Club Cool.
That is great. That sounds like some reboot in 2010, you know?
Or it sounds like cool. A Mandarin-speaking person trying to speak English, telling you they really enjoy the Mickey Mouse Club.
Wow. We went there.
Offensive and complicated.
Jeremy, back to you. A song in which your five emotions express their desire to live one day in the sun.
Oh.
Lord.
Say that again?
A song in which your five emotions express their desire to live one day in the sun.
This is like around the Disney universe, right?
That is correct.
Yeah, I got half of it. I'm having a hard time. A song in which your five emotions.
Oh, gosh.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, 5 seconds.
Time limits.
All right, Matt, would you like to steal?
Inside Out There.
That is correct.
Oh man, I was thinking Part of Your World for some reason.
Inside Out of Your World. All right, so Matt, this one is yours.
I'm scared.
In this song from Tangled, The villain tells Rapunzel about the world outside, where foxes and hounds have so much fun together.
Mother knows best of friends.
That is correct. That one doesn't quite make sense. But you got it. Okay, Jeremy.
It's all right.
A Disney Junior show in which the main characters earn gold doubloons every time they defeat opponents such as Jack Sparrow and the Auctioneer.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. All right. This is good. All right. Jake and the Neverland Pirates of the Caribbean.
That is correct. Very good.
Your gold doubloons threw me off.
Doubloons.
Doubloons. Is that what's, that's how you say doubloons in disguise?
Oh, I'm so going to start saying that. Okay, Matt, this quick service restaurant features New England style seafood, live concerts, and a gospel brunch on Sundays.
Columbia Harbor House of Blues.
Yes, that's correct. Jeremy, a character dining experience in the Norway Pavilion featuring photo ops with Abraham Lincoln and Ronald Reagan audio animatronics.
It's tricky.
It is that.
Do I have to get the restaurant name exactly right?
Maybe. I want to hear your best stab at it.
Is it Oshker Shosh? I can never say it right. Oshker Shosh Oshkowitz.
It's not Auschwitz.
Oscar Shosh Royal Hall of Presidents.
I'm going to see if Matt can take the steal before I say anything.
I only know like one word, maybe that Akershus Royal Banquet Hall of Presidents.
That is correct.
Shapoop.
And I'm going to go ahead and give it to you since you were more accurate. But very good. Very good. Oscar Shosh. So we're back to Matthew. This shop on Main Street USA often features glass blowing demonstrations presented by the voice of Mike Wazowski.
Lord, I don't even know the name of that store. I'm sorry, read it one more time.
Mm-hmm. The shop on Main Street USA often features glass-blowing demonstrations presented by the voice of Mike Wazowski.
Come on, Billy Crystal Works?
No, Jeremy for the steal?
I don't know either, but I'm going to go with Billy Crystal Palace.
No, that's something else, but very good. Billy Crystal Arts. But Jeremy, we are back to you. In this Disneyland dark ride, follow a wooden puppet and a lovable purple dragon as they both try to understand what it's like to have all five senses.
Pinocchio's daring journey into your imagination. Journey into imagination.
Okay, I will give that to you, yes. All right, Matt. During this walkthrough exhibit showcasing highlights from Walt's career, Mickey encourages guests to chant, "Dreams come true."
Walt Disney, one man's dream along with Mickey.
Very good. Man, you guys are so good at this. Okay. Jeremy, in this song, released for Magic Kingdom's 25th anniversary, Brian McKnight sings about the spinner in Adventureland, saying, "You opened up my eyes to a new world revealing."
Oh, remember the magic carpet rides? Remember the magic carpet rides? Magic carpets of Aladdin.
I will give that to you, yes.
What is the official name?
That's it, the magic carpets of Aladdin. One day, hopefully, we will be able to say, "Remember the magic carpets of Aladdin?"
And I'll be like, nope.
And we will all say no.
All right, Matt. The ruffians Entangled sing about kidnapping a redheaded man from his flying machine in this song.
Oh, I like this one.
I've got a dream finder. How about you?
That is correct. Oh, Jeremy, a song in which Mary Poppins declares that a video game featuring races through worlds made of candy help the medicine go down.
What is a spoonful of sugar rush?
Yes, very good. Matt, a Zootopia anthem in which Shakira pledges her determination to eat at Pop Century Resort's food court.
Oh.
Try everything pop.
Yeah, very good. I didn't know if you'd know that. All right. The score now is Matt 9, Jeremy 6.
I'm really impressed, Matt, that you got that. I would not have gotten that one.
Everything pop.
I took a stab at the food court name. I knew the song.
Jeremy, to enter this shop in Disney Springs, you get to walk under oversized Tinker Toys. But the only way to get out is to outsmart Lotso Huggenbear and his gang.
Once Upon a Toy Story 3.
Yes, you've got the number. Way to go. Matt, in this song from Enchanted, Giselle tidies up the house while telling folk tales to her animal friends in her best Uncle Remus impression.
That would be funny scene. A happy little working song of the South. Merry little working song of the South.
I'm going to give Jeremy at least a chance to steal.
Happy working song of the South.
That is correct. No adjective after happy.
So, yeah, even though it's in the lyrics.
True, but that's not the title. And also, I think that's the most offensive thing that's probably been stated on this whole show.
Uncle Remus impression?
No, happy working song of the South. Yeah, that is. Oh.
I will contest this one. I know it's not going to go anywhere. I contest that. Adding words is not the same as leaving out words.
All right. Duly noted. We'll see if it's a tie at the end.
Please note that I'm wagging my pen in the air, too. Okay. Not the same.
Okay. Jeremy, after this villain makes the front page, he sings, "You don't need money when you have an army of deathless warriors. They give you whatever you want."
Say that again.
After this villain makes the front page, he sings, "You don't need money when you have an army of deathless warriors. They gives you whatever you want."
Okay. Deathless warriors is throwing me off. Oh my gosh, I have no idea, so I'm going to pass it to Matthew.
Well, I don't know it, but I'll listen to it one more time.
After this villain makes the front page, he sings, "You don't need money when you have an army of deathless warriors. They gives you whatever you want."
Such as?
A pair of new shoes.
What?
Well, Matt, who has Deathless Warriors? Because I think I have the other half, if you have that half. Because it's something from Newsies.
The Horned King does.
Ah!
Okay, no one gets the point, but you guys have it if you just put your minds together.
The Horned King of New York.
That is correct. Yeah. I was pretty proud of that.
That is good.
Matt, we're back to you. The improvisational acting troupe that performs daily inside the tiny ice cream shop on Sunset Boulevard.
Is it Citizens? Citizens? No, that's not that. Is it Citizens of Hollywood Scoops?
Ding, ding, ding. Very good.
I was pulling at some straws on that one.
That was impressive. All right, Jeremy, you still have a chance. If the 1930s style bar at Boardwalk Inn were relocated to the riverboat that sails the rivers of America, it would be called this. This one and the last one, I'm not going to lie, are pretty hard.
Read that one more time.
If the 1930s style bar at Boardwalk Inn were relocated to the riverboat that sails the rivers of America, it would be called this.
I can only think of one bar at Boardwalk, and it does not make sense.
Okay. Okay.
So jelly rolling down the river.
Oh, I wish that was the answer, but it's not. Matt, do you know?
The only bar I know is the Abracadabra. Whatever that new bar is. So, no, I don't know.
No, it's Bellevue Lounge. So it's the Liberty Bellevue Lounge.
Okay.
Yeah. But Matt, we're back to you. You can win by one more point if you get this right. It's a signature restaurant in the France Pavilion that highlights the illustrious career of the Disney legend who voiced the ghost host.
Monsieur Paul Frise.
Very good.
Wow. That was good.
Man, you knew that right off the bat. All right, well, the final score, Jeremy, 8, and Matt, 12.
Congratulations, Matthew! You have won this Matt Cheddar Game! Join us next time, same Matt Cheddar Podcast, same Matt Cheddar
Time for another round of Disney hashtags. Now, this is a game in which we throw out a hashtag out there and we try to get the Twitter all abuzz posting the hashtag in a comedic and enjoyable manner, as most of the internet is. Today's hashtag is Bad Disney Sequels. This is inspired by the recent announcement that Wreck-It Ralph 2 is having a sequel, which we knew, but they announced the title, which is Ralph Breaks the Internet, Wreck-It Ralph 2. Of course, in reference to the Kim Kardashian thing a few years ago when she broke the internet with that cover where the champagne glass was stuck in her booty. And in the, do you all remember that? And the champagne was shooting over her head.
I mean, I can't imagine that this would be a direct reference to that, but that is the first thing I thought of with Breaks the Internet.
Oh my gosh, if the poster is Ralph with a champagne glass stuck in his butt cheeks, I don't care. Give it all the Oscars.
You'd think they go with, like, Ralph offline or something else. A little shorter.
Or, wait for it, Ralph wrecks the Internet.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to assume that this is a very literal title, and probably he's going to break the internet, and Al Gore has to come and help fix it.
I'll fix it with my solar panels.
But the thing is, like, is the subtitle necessary? Like, I saw people joking online, you know, the rescuers down under, colon, rescuers two. Like, it's just unnecessary.
Yeah.
True. But if other Disney films got sequels, and some of these that we picked already have sequels, but we like to pretend they don't exist, what would they be? So let's go break the internet ourselves. Mad Chatters break the internet with hashtag bad Disney sequels. Pocahontas 2 and the Journey of the Trail of Tears.
Oh my gosh, I had Pocahontas Trail of Tears. But another one I thought of, and I couldn't think of a name for it, but basically, like, Pocahontas 2 casino grand opening or something like that.
Oh! Gambling and depression.
Yeah. Bad Disney sequels. Bambi 2, Hunting Season.
That one stings.
Stinks or stings?
Stings.
Mary Poppins 2, Uncle Albert Gets Committed.
Mulan 2, Quest of the North Carolina Bathrooms.
I almost went there. I actually have it crossed out. Mine was Mulan 2, Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Fantasia, Radio Disney. Yeah. Uh-uh.
Peter Pan, Child Protective Services, Go to Neverland.
That'd be sad.
Yeah.
Dumbo 2, Battle of the Ivory Poachers.
Oh, no. It's like Kilimanjaro Safaris.
Huh. Yeah. Used to be.
The Sword in the Stone 2, King Arthur Hits Puberty. Because he is really young.
Three Caballeros, Donald Builds a Wall.
Yeah.
Which Donald? Who knows?
And there's that map at the end of Grand Fiesta Tour. You can add the wall to that.
Just a big wall.
Oh my gosh, that works on so many levels.
That's great.
We're going to make the wall serape proof.
Chicken Little 2. Why is this happening?
Yeah, seriously. Pinocchio 2. Pinocchio 2.
Pinocchio 2.
Pinocchio 2. Return to Pleasure Island, just because that would be the most terrifying animated film ever. Those scenes still haunt me.
If it's just like donkey carcasses and bones everywhere.
Exactly. Oh. And you still hear the sounds of like braying donkey boys.
Yeah. Princess and the Frog. Katrina comes to town.
Oh no. They're really old then.
it's a different generation.
Oh, I see. It's their grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
Oh wow.
Home on the Range 2 and the story of how I got this hamburger.
Hey, I'd watch that. The Little Mermaid 2, Oil Spill. Wah wah. Walt Disney Imagineering is known for its breakthroughs in technology, its inventiveness, its incredible storytelling, all of which is on display throughout Disney parks around the world. Over the decades, the Imagineers have started basically from scratch to bring us original stories in the forms of attractions that are like nothing we've ever experienced before. Things like Haunted Mansion, Pirates of the Caribbean, more recently, Expedition Everest. These rides have revolutionized the theme park experience. Of course, besides theme parks, we also know the Walt Disney Company specializes in movie making. And sometimes Imagineers are tasked with putting their creativity to work in order to bring together the world of film with the world of theme parks. Now, some of their efforts to bring Disney films into the parks have felt maybe a bit forced or less than inspired. But sometimes the Imagineers incorporate a film in just the right way, giving it the exact treatment it deserves. And the result, if I may say so, is magic. And those are the moments we want to talk about on this week's show. So we're going to count down our top five Disney film tie-ins, or our, in another way to say it, our top five ways in which a Disney film, or maybe just an element of a Disney film, has been incorporated into Walt Disney World. So without further ado, how about you kick things off, Matthew?
My number five is The Seven Dwarfs Mine Train at New Fantasyland. And this is coming from someone who loves his classic dark rides, who loved Snow White's Adventure, and was a little on the emotional side when they announced that Snow White's Adventure would be leaving because of the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train and the Princess Fairy Tale Hall and all that stuff. But having ridden Seven Dwarfs Mine Train many, many times, I stick by my initial impression of it, which is to say that I think it is a quintessential Disney attraction from beginning to end. From the load zone, the queue area, to the vehicles, to the music, to the dark ride elements, and even the coaster elements, and the theming that just is all around it. I think it's almost a perfect attraction.
I feel terrible because I feel like I ran over Magic Kingdom a billion times in my head, and I totally forgot about that one. Because that would probably make my list. But
yeah, and to the movie obvious element, it's a perfect nod to Snow White, because it's not just as Snow White's Adventure was a ride through the movie from beginning to end. This is like one little segment. This is the time period would be between the dwarves leaving the mine and the witch or the hag is at the door giving Snow White the apple. Or she's in the at the end of the film, they're all in there dancing and she's waiting outside knocking, which is, you know, odd. But all that aside, the vulture sitting on top of the wooden post as you make the lift up the lift hill, I think is a wonderful. Are those from the old attraction?
I don't know. I can't even picture them in the new attraction, to be totally honest.
Well, and then that whole last scene is from the old attraction, at least the inside segment where Snow White and the dwarves are dancing. So
that loading zone alone is just terrific. Yeah. It's so good.
Yeah. It's dark and it was cavey, like you're under mine, and it's dank in there, the little black light elements, and the dwarves are I don't know how to describe the tunes that are playing. It's from Snow White. It's like the happy song and hi-ho and whistle while you work, but they're instrumental versions.
Yeah.
Good.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah. My number five is a little unconventional. I guess maybe I steered towards not the obvious. I don't know why, but for this one, at least I did. It's the Princess and the Frog section in Mickey's Royal Friendship Fair, which is not the best show in the world. You know, it doesn't break the mold necessarily. But Princess and the Frog, I think, is a great film that is severely underused at Walt Disney World. And so I think, you know, you see her in her princess dress in Festival of Fantasy. You see Facilier only at Halloween, pretty much. You just kind of get, like, you know what to expect with them. But when they brought out this show, she comes out in her flapper dress, and Naveen is in like this plaid vest, and Lewis comes out and he plays the trumpet, and the whole segment is just jazz and up-tempo. There's a tap dancer who does like a little number and he gets big applause from the crowd. They sing Dig a Little Deeper. This whole segment, I just feel like, is exactly what Princess and the Frog should be about. Like up-tempo, jazzy, because you see her so much in her princess dress and that makes her seem like just like every other princess, where that's only really, what, 5 minutes in the entire movie where she's actually a princess? The rest, she's this girl who has dreams and is not defined by a man or a kingdom or anything like that. I know that sounds like I'm taking charge of the feminist movement, but I just mean that's the Tiana
we know. Take charge of it.
That's the Tiana we know from the film. And she comes out there in Mickey's Royal Friendship Fair and she is that girl. And I just love it.
typical man trying to take over control of the feminist movement.
Anyway, good stuff.
No, agreed. I agree with that. I would argue to say, though, that the goal was to become a princess, ultimately. I mean, it is in the title, princess. So,
would you say that's her goal from the beginning of the film?
Well, maybe not her goal as a character, but the goal of the film.
Sure.
So it's not outrageous that they feature her in her final state.
No, that's true. And it fits that parade because all the princesses, for the most part, are in like their gowns. Well, no, that's not true. Just Belle. But anyway, yeah. And Cinderella. No. I don't know. It's been a long time since I've seen Festival of Fantasy. I know Belle and Tiana are in their dresses, and then the Frozen Sisters.
The Frozen Sisters. That's an interesting way of putting them. My number five is also in Festival of Fantasy, and it is the Maleficent scene. Now, it's interesting, as a child, of course, we watched Disney films growing up, but I can honestly say we were not as exposed to Sleeping Beauty as much as we were to, say, Cinderella, The Little Mermaid, Snow White. It was just not a film that we owned or anybody that we knew owned. So I did not actually really see or at least remember seeing Sleeping Beauty until I was probably late teenager, college age-esque, somewhere around there. So seeing it at a later age, I don't really have the attachment to it that perhaps I would from a nostalgic level as other films. Also saying that I think it's one of the weaker princess films, and I know that people would probably disagree with me on that. I still think it's a good film, don't get me wrong, but not, she's not a memorable character. She definitely is the least personable of all the princesses.
Because she's asleep for like 30 minutes.
True, but even when she's awake, she's just kind of like at least Snow White has a bit of a personality.
Sure. I think the problem is, maybe not the problem, but as far as watching as a kid goes, because we did own it, and I was never that attached to it. I think it's because it's a really artistic film with the music they use and like the animation with the, you know, the square trees have become famous now. It's more of a, like an artsy type film that I appreciate more now than I ever would have when I was 10 or 15.
I think from a character perspective, the three fairies definitely carry that film for most of it. But anyways, ultimately the climactic scene is the scene with the dragon at the end and the prince. So I'm glad that they were able to capture that scene in the Festival of Fantasy parade. And not only capture it, but they gave it a stylistic element that's very unique in that it is the steampunk-esque version. But they did it justice. They really did. That big, massive, overwhelming dragon coming down the street, and then he stops, or she stops every few feet and blows fire, and Prince Philip is there battling as they go. It's a really cool portion of the film that's represented well.
There are actually lots of floats from that parade that crossed my mind, but Maleficent easily is the showstopper, I guess, of that parade. Always gets oohs and ahs.
And hand claps. My number four is what should be an entire land. I don't know why they didn't do this, but it's Storybook Circus. And in that, it is a large part a nod to Dumbo, which it includes the new two flying Dumbos over there. And then the Casey Jr. Circus train play area in the middle. But the whole thing is themed to the circus. And even the train station is there. And the whole thing is themed around these the switch tracks that are there. And the restrooms are in the station house. And then you have the other things that aren't Dumbo related, but they're still circus related, which kind of ties it back to Dumbo. And I know that we all three, if I'm remembering right, love this area. And the background music, which is kind of the acoustic-y Dumbo music, Casey Jr., When I See an Elephant Fly, and the whole area over there, the popcorn lights on the sign, and the intricate details on the sidewalk, the power lines, the whole nine yards they put into making that area work, I think are wonderful.
Would you say that all of those details, including the power lines, make them stand out above the crowd?
Huh?
Is that a Goofy movie reference?
Thank you. Yes, I was worried no one was going to get it.
I wouldn't get it.
I thought you were transitioning to your number four, and I'm like, what? A Goofy movie is there?
Oh, no.
Hashtag bad Disney sequels. Goofy movie. Where's mom?
If Powerline's in it, it's going to be good.
What happened to mom?
Oh, I just got the Powerline joke.
Try to keep up, Derek. I move quickly.
I'm going to go next. Well, it's my turn. But also, my number four is Dumbo as well. Because Dumbo is an iconic attraction, but honestly, I don't know if it would have made my list before the whole storybook circus transformation. Because, yeah, it's iconic, and I think it's a great way to bring Dumbo into the parks to allow kids to fly on Dumbo. That's great. But it's still a spinner. But when you add the whole storybook circus around it, I mean, everything you said, I agree with. The theming is so good. And even just Dumbo alone, with the circus tent behind it, the water underneath it, you've got the two things spinning, you've got Timothy Q. Mouse up there, just everything about that area. And the Casey Jr. Splash Station is, like, specifically themed to Dumbo. So I would argue that, you know, the whole area has that theme going. And it's, gosh, it's not only just so, so good, but it is a great way to bring Dumbo into the parks. If you're gonna honor Dumbo, I mean, what better way than to create basically an entire land themed to the circus?
Yep.
My number four is Finding Nemo the Musical. Now, Finding Nemo is interesting because you could argue that there's two representations in the park, one that is good and one that falls short. I think the Seas with Nemo and Friends fall short. As far as a dark ride goes, it's okay, but it lacks in many ways. They fail to capture the charm of the movie and the show that the show has, where the musical performance at Animal Kingdom captures the essence of the film, the heart of the film, and everything you like about the film, and it boils it down to about 30 minutes of musical fun. So they did a good job. We've talked about the show before. Everybody's seen the show. It's been there for 10 years. But it's good, and it gets stuck in your head.
Totally. Yeah.
Even a cold-hearted person like Derek has come around to Finding Nemo the Musical. Someone who did not like... In fact, I remember both of you, actually, openly criticizing me.
Openly?
You criticized me, both of you, for purchasing the Finding Nemo the Musical soundtrack when I purchased it. Yes, you did, because I even offered to let you guys burn it, and you said, why would I want that? Oh, I can't stand... You know, the lyrics are not that good.
Okay, you were putting words in our mouth. I remember loving it the first time we saw it, but then, yeah, criticizing it maybe later because it's like, I just feel like there wasn't a repeatable factor to it. I have completely changed my stance on that issue now, and I love it, and it will appear on my list a little later on. So.
Oh, so shut the door.
I was going to say stay tuned for that, but shut the door is also... apropos.
What was the thing you said the one time? Like, why did I say that? Shut up now.
Why did I say that?
Number three. My last three, just spoiler alert, are all entire attractions. So I'm not really nuanced in my Disney film tie-ins. My number three is Splash Mountain. It is based on a movie, listeners, and it's a little-known movie called Song of the South, 1946. Go look it up. Apparently, it's offensive, so it is not released in the U.S. I don't know if it's released anywhere anymore. You can find some bootleg copies. You might find the whole thing on YouTube. I don't know. But it is based on, and it was actually a pretty elaborate film with some heavy hitting actors and actresses for, you know, Walt Disney in the 1940s, based on the tales of Uncle Remus from the old antebellum South and, the adventures of Brer Rabbit, Brer Fox, Brer Bear. So, all the stories that you find in Splash Mountain, with some moderate accommodations because of cultural issues, are part of the Uncle Remus tales that are featured in Song of the South, as are the songs that are in there. They're all from this movie that no one's ever heard of. So, first of all, it's a miracle that that attraction was ever made, yeah, being that the movie was in the state that it is. But now that it is one of the most loved attractions at Walt Disney World, it's good to know that it's actually based on a film, a very old Disney film.
Because it was going to be, Michael Eisner wanted it to be based on Splash, right?
Yes, the Tom Hanks.
Well, he just wanted it to be, he just wanted that name in there, right? He just wanted Splash to be in there somehow.
Okay. Well, anyway, yeah, the Mermaid movie was going to be the focus. So I do wonder how they were like, you know what, instead, well, I guess they already had the audio animatronics from America Sings, right? Something like this?
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe that made it easy for them to choose Song of the South.
I know that they were going to call it Briar Patch Run or something like that. And Eisner wanted a tie-in to Splash somehow. And so they said, well, how about Splash Mountain? And he's like, okay, that's subliminal enough.
And isn't there like Zippity Doodah Run as well? Or
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's the one. That's what it's
called. Yeah.
Zippity Doodah Run.
That would be fun, but Splash Mountain works too.
Yeah, this was my number one, because this is how you take, as Matt said, a movie that is largely unknown, and you literally squeeze every drop out of it.
Yeah, every last drop.
For real, like, this is like, you know, the limit on the table, and you get every bit into your sweet tea, because they took everything that is good about the film and somehow managed to make it work in that attraction. And not only work, but work at a level of excellence that is unmatched in a lot of other attractions that they try on. So when you turn a movie into an attraction and do it well, Splash Mountain is the gold star standard.
Oh, so true. Yeah. Are there tambourine playing birds in Song of the South?
Not that I recall, no.
Really, nothing else is in the movie except the three main characters, maybe the possums.
Okay.
Everything else is from America Sings.
Hmm. Great attraction. My number three is from, I guess, like a series of films. It's The Muppets. Over in Liberty Square now they have The Muppets Present Great Moments in American History, which, I realize The Muppets have been a TV show and a movie, like lots of things, so it's not just a movie, but in the sense that it's not like an original attraction, that's why I feel like it fits on this list. And, you know, Muppets 3D, it's fine. Like, even the first time I saw it, I think I was like, eh.
It's fine. It's okay.
Well, it's just like, we've already seen Muppets on screen. Sure, not in 3D, but like, if I wanted to watch a Muppet movie, I would just go watch the Muppet movie. You know what I mean?
Give it time, folks. He felt the same way about Finding Nemo. Give it a few more years. He'll be crying at Muppet Vision 3D.
No, I will say I enjoyed Muppet 3D more earlier in my Disney going experiences. But anyway,
that's a synapse right there.
I'll give you a few minutes to work that one out. But the thing about this show in Liberty Square, I remember when they first announced the rumor, my first thought was, that is so stupid. they're not gonna do that. That rumor is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And then when I heard that, like, it was for real coming, I thought, that is so stupid. That is so dumb. Why are they doing this? They're trying to, I guess,
shoehorn.
They're trying to shoehorn, and they're trying to relate to, I guess, me, the person who doesn't really care about Hall of Presidents, and they're trying to get just like the lowest common denominator to come enjoy Liberty Square. That was my initial opinion.
You are the lowest common denominator.
And I like Hall of Presidents now, but anyway, we can go there another time. So it just felt so forced. Well, I remember the first time I saw, I think I was there opening day, and I was blown away by everything about it. The script is hilarious, but even beyond that, the fact that you're seeing Muppets as they really are in the real world, and I realize they're fictional characters, but you're not seeing yet another movie of the Muppets. You are there face to face with these puppets being controlled by actual puppeteers, but it's the same Muppets like you know and love from the movies, and they're saying exactly the kinds of things you expect them to say, and yet it has a perfectly natural, it feels organic, this tie-in to like America's history. Somehow, it's not like the Muppets have a huge history with talking about America other than Uncle Sam, you know, and yet they've done it so organically for them to talk about America's history in Liberty Square, and it just feels right somehow. Everything about it, I love it.
It's Sam great. The Eagle.
Oh, what did I say?
Uncle Sam.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, him too.
How dare you?
Sam the
Well,
Eagle.
I would argue that the Muppets do have a good way of connecting to history. I mean, look at A Muppet Christmas Carol. It's a fictional account, but all the Muppets feel very natural in their historical...
It's a fictional account of real happenings.
Of real happenings?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But I'm glad you like the Muppets there in Liberty Square. My number three, controversial pick. Controversial. Because some people feel that these don't work well there, but I think they do. And again, squeezing the lemon of life perfectly. And that is the Three Caballeros in Grand Fiesta Tour.
Okay.
Again, here is a film, not characters, but a film that I would dare say 90% of people who go to Walt Disney World have never seen. It's not going to be at the top of anybody's list as far as greatest animated features of all time. In fact, a couple years ago, they released the two films, Saludos Amigos and Three Caballeros, together in a DVD pack. And I was surprised they did that. Happy they did it, but surprised nonetheless. These films came out during World War II. It was a time when the Disney company was whatever. And yet, they put them into the attraction there in Epcot, in the Mexico Pavilion. And even though only one of the three is technically Mexican, it works well. It works well. Now, you know, Matt has pointed out some issues with the animation as far as... characters not exactly lining up in the right spots or whatever. But that aside, nowhere else are you going to be able to put these characters and for them to work well.
Yeah, I think that's the answer to your question. Disney thought, what movie about Mexico can we bring into the Mexican Pavilion? They had one choice.
Yeah.
No, I mean... Maybe, but...
In like a couple years, it'll be the Coco River Adventure or whatever.
But they could have also... They could have amped up that attraction in a different direction, not tied to a Disney film. Like, there was no reason for them to go with the Three Caballeros.
That's true.
I mean, they could have just put Donald in and left the other two out. You know, if they want to.
Because correct me if I'm wrong, that was the first introduction of films into World Showcase. I mean, other than meeting characters. I think it was.
Yeah, I don't think any other.
So yeah, so they certainly didn't have to go that direction.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's kind of a... It feels... You know, you have those Epcot purists out there who want Epcot to not be tied to characters at all. And I respect that. I do. But I would also argue the counterpoint of if I go to a Disney park, I expect there to be an element of Disney in the park. I mean, that's just the way it is. So if there's going to be something that you can meld those two worlds putting characters into attractions, I really think Grand Fiesta Tour does a good job with it because they still kept the part about Mexico. It's not a Three Caballeros ride through the film. It's integrated well, unlike the Frozen attraction where you're not looking at Anna and Elsa as they go through Norway. They are in their own little fictional world. Three Caballeros are in Mexico. They're going through a Mexican town. They're going through a Mexican fiesta.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good blend.
Mexican restaurants with chefs with bad eyesight.
Sharpening those knives.
Yeah.
For our listeners who missed it, Matt just did his impression of the waiter.
Good night.
But he just did it again, and it's spot on. This is where that video podcast would come in perfectly.
Yeah.
Come to our meetup on April 29th.
Yeah.
He'll show you in person.
Me.
Number two.
My number two is going to surprise you. Cause it is Pirates of the Caribbean.
No.
Yeah. No, this is going to surprise you because it's number two. And you'll just have to wait to see what my number one is. But my number two is Pirates of the Caribbean.
That's how countdowns work.
And I do not mean only the attraction. I mean how they brought in the Pirates films to Adventureland over in the Pirates area, including the attraction. So obviously, as a lover of Pirates of the Caribbean, I was not one of the ones upset by the fact they were bringing the film in, because I also liked the films. I liked the movies because I liked the ride, and I think that they flowed seamlessly together. So adding Jack Sparrow and Barbossa and the waterfall thing at the beginning with Davy Jones, I liked all that. And plus it meant that the whole ride got a little facelift. So I enjoyed that a lot. I enjoyed one of my favorite parts about what they've done is the incorporation of the Pirates of the Caribbean film score, the new stuff with Hans Zimmer did it after number one. Klaus Badelt did the first one, Curse of the Black Pearl. So that stuff, you know, in the battle scene, and then even outside, you know, as you go into that part of Adventureland, you start hearing the score. And that makes that whole area have this little Pirates Plaza kind of feel, with the Tortuga Tavern over there and the Pirates of the Caribbean on the left and the Jack Sparrow show on the right. All that kind of makes its own little pirate mini land. And I really think it works well. Now, the only thing they have to do now is make the Tortuga Tavern an actually themed restaurant, and I'd be all on board for that. But
it's gonna
give number two place to Pirates of the Caribbean tie in there. Adventureland.
I will say, I think it was a right choice, a good choice, that within like the last year, I think they've toned down a few of those nods. For instance, I'm thinking the little tower outside used to have that banner that said Dead Men Tell No Tales, you know, which I personally thought kind of looked tacky, and I'm glad that's gone now. And also, when you walk in the queue before you go in the actual like air conditioned inside part, there used to be those swords painted on the wall. I don't remember what it said, but it was clearly like a nod to the ride or the movie, and that's gone now. And I think now it's like a really good blend of movie and old attraction.
Yeah, and once you cross the threshold, which this was the case even when they did the film, the additions, when you cross the threshold into the actual castle queue, when you go through the doors to the inside, it's still the old Pirates queue music from the 60s, which I'm glad they kept that the way it was. Other than that, I love all the tie-ins. I think they work well.
I do kind of wish the gift shop didn't look like the movies threw up all over it. I mean, everything in there, I feel like, is a movie prop, you know?
And it makes me want to throw up all over myself.
Yes. As Jeremy would say. All right, my number two, it's been mentioned already. It is Finding Nemo, the musical. Everything Jeremy said, I agree with, but I also want to add that I think so many times adding a Disney film to the parks becomes like, I don't want to say second nature, I don't know the right word, but it becomes like, oh, obviously you're going to do a dark ride. You know, oh, we want to bring Frozen into the parks. Well, obviously, we're just going to put it where that boat ride is in Norway and not even change the track, you know? Or let's turn it into a 3D film. Like, these are just obvious things to do with a movie. Finding Nemo took it a step farther by bringing in, you know, Tony-winning songwriters, bringing in puppets, which maybe the Disney Junior show already had. But other than that, like, Disney World wasn't using this kind of platform, you know, to tell a story yet. And they were bringing a brand new original musical to Animal Kingdom, something you can only see at Animal Kingdom. And I think that's giving a movie what it deserves. You know, Frozen Ever After did not give Frozen what it deserves. I think Finding Nemo the musical really did. And like you said, Jeremy, I do love it now. I may have gone back and forth on the show in the past, but I mean, no one can deny that it's an impressive show. The way the actors are really good performers, having to do all the puppeteer stuff while acting and singing is very impressive. And even beyond that, the script is good, the songs are good, it tells the story in a very concise way. Finding Nemo is a great movie that deserves something like this.
And when we make our list of top five references to fecal matter, it makes the list as well.
Yeah.
Actually, that would be a fun list. Think about all the fecal matter references throughout Walt Disney World.
Feces.
It sounds like a list that would be on our show, for sure.
It's tough to be a bug. There's
feces.
Feces there. A lot of Animal Kingdom. Yeah. A lot of things in Animal Kingdom dealing with poop.
Animals.
My number two, speaking of poop, my number two is Toy Story in general. You could argue that there are elements of Toy Story that are not done well in the parks. For instance, I think Buzz Lightyear Space Ranger Spin is a good attempt, but it falls short. I do like that they are not afraid to explore that kind of subplot of Buzz Lightyear, in that he gets his own attraction and his own Pixar film. Not a lot of people know that the animated Buzz Lightyear Space Ranger Adventure, whatever it is, was a 2D Pixar film that came out a couple years ago.
Oh, really? Yeah. He had a TV show. I knew about the TV show.
Yeah, I think the film was kind of based on the TV show. Same concept there, you know, whatever. But I think that Toy Story Midway Mania is a good element. I know we make the joke about you've been shrunk to the size of a toy. But when you go in, the queue, as Matt doesn't like it, but the attraction overall does a good job of incorporating those characters into a fun, unique experience that feels natural to the Toy Story universe.
Yeah, it only makes sense that an attraction themed around toys and games should be an actual game. You know, like you are playing a game.
Yeah, the only thing I wish that inside the attraction, it's very flat. So as you go from scene to scene, you're just seeing really like screens and flat walls and art. It'd be cool if they could put in some animatronics during the transitions as you are whipping around through there. But I understand that money and things don't always... Well, I mean, if you're going to put in some cool animatronics, you want to be able to see them for more than just 7 seconds as you whip by.
Well, speaking of animatronics, it is kind of a shame now that Don Rickles has passed that we don't have that Mr. Potato Head animatronic anymore. Surely they kept,
I think,
like...
That's a crying shame.
It is. And not even before he passed, it would have been a shame, but...
I just mean, like, I'm willing to bet...
Why did they think, let's get rid of that? That was like the best part of that queue.
I'm willing to bet we'll see that animatronic again in Toy Story Land.
Oh, yeah. It'll pop up in the middle of it somewhere.
Yeah, good call. Yeah.
I can't see them just... It's not a theme park connection or anything like that.
Have you seen the video where he drops his ear?
Yes.
Numerous times. I mean, he dropped his ear numerous times. Not that I've seen the video numerous times. I think I was there once when he dropped his ear, and a cast member just kind of waddled out from the back and picked it up and left. Like, didn't even put it back in. Just, like... Took it to the backstage. It's like, oh, okay.
Got his ear.
We grab my Black Les Paul. We grab
I'll get it for you. My number one, I broke the rules. And y'all break the rules all the time. And people say, this isn't, blah, 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 I broke the rules. So I'm not even going to hear any complaints about me breaking the rules. And I'm sorry that you didn't break the rules. It's not my problem, it's yours.
Oh, I feel a lot of pent-up aggression in that, but okay.
Number one, I just was thinking today about films in the Disney parks. And, like, the quintessential film tie-in to an attraction that is everything that that film embodies. I mean, everything from beginning to end, attraction style, attraction vehicle, music, action, scenes, everything is the Indiana Jones adventure at Adventureland in Disneyland, California.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this is a Walt Disney World thing, so whatever, broke the rules. I just cannot help but say that's number one. And it's been 22 years since I've experienced it, and I still remember how great I thought just the queue was, and the music, and the pre-show, and I mean, it's just everything that you would want an Indiana Jones ride to be. It's a perfect attraction from beginning to end.
It's so good. I mean, if we were going to include Disneyland things, it would be hard for me not to include Radiator Springs Racers.
Yeah.
Again, I'm sorry you didn't break the rules.
Well, I thought that's where you're going when you said even down to the attraction vehicle, because those attraction vehicles are the characters from the movies, you know? And
oh, yeah.
Gosh, I love that attraction so much. And another one I thought of that I almost did cheat, like until about an hour before we started recording, I had it on my list. But since it's from Disneyland, I didn't want to make you guys mad. So I'm glad you went with something from Disneyland. The Peter Pan scene in Fantasmic is such a brilliant incorporation of that film, and it brings the characters to life. It's action-packed. I love it. Now, there are rumors that when Fantasmic comes back this summer after its refurb, that scene will not be in it anymore. But as of now...
That's why I love the Pocahontas scene in our Fantasmic is... I don't love it.
Oh. I mean, it's something, at least.
It's not just music and nothing, so...
I mean, if you're going to incorporate Pocahontas, I can't think of a better way to do it. But anyway.
If I chose a number one from Walt Disney World, and also probably break the rules on this, and that is that it's extinct, and it would be 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea from Fantasyland, I do miss that attraction. I mean, it was just like the old submarine voyage at Disneyland, but you rode in the Nautilus, and it was the 20,000 Leagues music, and Captain Nemo was your host. And it just had that dark, ominous 20,000 Leagues tone to it that was so wonderful. And it's gone forever.
Well, my number two was Finding Nemo. My number one is actually Festival of the Lion King. I went back and forth with these two, and I was like, which one am I going to include on my list? And then I realized, why can't they both be on the list? And I think I get...
Por que tenemos dos?
What?
Por qué tenemos dos?
Does that mean why not both? Why not?
Yeah, it's on that taco commercial about soft and hard shells.
Oh, there you go.
And they lift the little girl in the air. Yeah!
Por qué tenemos dos?
I couldn't have said it better myself. I think I gave the edge to Festival of the Lion King simply because I love Harambe so much and I love the exterior. Especially now, the new exterior of that theater, you know, it's like the Harambe Theater or something like that. And it's got the little marquee that says now showing Festival of the Lion King. So I love all that. And it fits so seamlessly. But I also think like when you open a park called Animal Kingdom, it's got to have something Lion King. And I think this was the absolute best way they could incorporate such an iconic Disney film by making it into a musical. All of your favorite Lion King songs are in it. It's got like it's high energy the whole time, you know, Finding Nemo. Has a few moments that I could see kids checking out during. Festival of the Lion King does not have that. I mean, even when the song is slow, there's something visually going on in front of you that you can't take your eyes away from. And it's got the characters, Timon, the Tumble Monkeys. It may not be my favorite thing in Walt Disney World, but if you're going to treat the Lion King, if you're going to give park treatment to the Lion King, I can't think of a better way to do it.
My favorite thing about Festival of the Lion King is when they do the In the jungle, the mighty jungle. And Simba, the audio animatronic, is singing the ooh. Just watch that animatronic sing. It will give you life.
See, I like the Pumbaa one because when he sings, his bottom jaw like yeah, wobbles up and down as if he's got vibrato going on, yeah. You know?
Yes. Yeah, just don't watch the live performers next time you're there. Watch the animatronics. They're quite entertaining. My number one was mentioned. That was Song of the South. But have no fear, listeners. I have a backup.
Uh-oh.
And I think this was my runner-up. Essentially, Disney. That's what I think of when I think of this movie tie-in to a park. And that is When You Wish Upon a Star.
Oh.
Featured in any fireworks show, but particularly Wishes at the Magic Kingdom. Mm-hmm. Pretty much just Jiminy Cricket in general. Jiminy Cricket to me is one of those characters that just brings a level of comfort to you, no matter where you are or what he's saying. You just feel good hearing it. And maybe we've just been conditioned because he's kind of become our generation and previous generations conscious, you know, the voice of our conscious. But anyways, when he begins to speak, and then of course, whether it's the musical, just the musical notes or the actual words to When You Wish Upon a Star are sung, it just gives you the feels all over. Mm-hmm. And it kind of has become the purpose statement of Walt Disney World and the company in general, of When You Wish Upon a Star, dreams come true. So I think it's a great tie-in, and I hope that no matter what fireworks show comes, I hope that that will always be a part of it.
Yeah, I was just thinking, 75 years later, and Disney still knows that that's the song that will get you, you know?
Yeah, every time. And it's anything. Listen, it's just an octave jump. I mean, When You Wish Upon a Star, Over the Rainbow, My Own True Love from Gone with the Wind. Every last one of those, just immediately, like, it goes bomb, bomb. You're like, the tears start coming immediately. But When You Wish Upon a Star, I mean, it's at the beginning of all of their films.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
Yeah, it's just quintessentially Disney, which is interesting because of the movie it came from, and it wasn't like a Disney blockbuster at the time, but I think because of the Wonderful World of Disney in the 50s, the Disneyland TV show, that song kind of just became the theme song for Disney, and rightly so.
Well, and when you look at that as well, in the 1950s, when Walt was exploring television, they used characters like Jiminy Cricket and Tinkerbell, who were not the main characters like Mickey Mouse, at least not initially, because they were scared that they were going to fail, and they didn't want Mickey Mouse attached to a failure. So they weren't a failure, they were successful, which... Now you have these secondary characters who really have become stars in their own right on a level as Mickey Mouse. I mean, I could, you probably could argue that, well, maybe not like little kids, but for the general public, people recognize Tinkerbell. They recognize Jiminy Cricket just as quickly as they would Minnie Mouse and Donald Duck.
Yeah.
Well, this was a good list. It was good hearing your answers. And honestly, it was good talking about these things because sometimes I think I get in the mindset that all overlays are bad, you know, all are shoehorned, but that's so not the case. Some of them are just so natural, and Disney World wouldn't be the same without them. I'm sure we could come up with a list of bad ones as well. But to end it on a positive note, I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up here. Maybe we'll do that list another time. Thank you so much for listening. You can always find us on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. So send us some of your favorite attractions and shows and musical numbers that incorporate a Disney film. What did Disney do right with their films? Let us know, and you can send your emails to comments@madchatters.net. We always appreciate those iTunes reviews, so if you could just take a few minutes to leave us one over there, it helps people find our show. We'll see you next week.
Take a little time to find the magic in every day.
Adios.
I would have to explain it, but I was thinking something with like Beauty and the Beast 2, 50 Shades of Grey stuff or something, because she fell in love with him while he had her prisoner, you know?
Yeah.
And then once he's prince again, she wants to go back to like the risque stuff.
When you were a big hairy monster and you had me locked up. You
know? Yeah.
Mm. Or Beauty and the Beast 2 and the Journey to the Furry Convention. Can't you just see them like a few months into their marriage, and one night she turns over and like has like a mascot looking head and like, would you just put it on just for tonight?
That's messed up.